Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's 100% natural, hormone-free, and side-effect-free. Here's how it works. The app analyzes daily changes in your body temperature to find your fertile window, so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. Natural Cycles is a clinically proven, non-hormonal birth control option that's 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. No synthetic hormones, just science. And if you're ready to start family planning, switching from preventing to planning a pregnancy is as easy as tapping a button. Plus, the Natural Cycles app makes tracking fertility easy. You can measure your temperature trends using an Oura Ring, Apple Watch, or our Bluetooth thermometer, which is free when you sign up for an annual subscription. Join over 4 million registered users who are taking control of their fertility naturally. Save 15% when you sign up with code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com. That's Radio 15 for 15% off today.
It's really also a decision based on common sense. It didn't work the other way. It was a disaster where somebody from a certain location in a very liberal state or a liberal judge or a liberal group of judges could tie up a whole country for years because their decision would sometimes take years to overturn. We've overturned many of the decisions, but it would take years to do it. And we have to act quickly when it comes to illegal immigration. We have murderers, killers, we have drug dealers, we have what they've allowed to come into our country should never be forgotten. It should never be forgotten what they've done to our country. And we have to be able to act very quickly, and we're going to do that.
Thank President you. Trump from the briefing room this morning in wake of the Supreme Court rulings that were announced this morning. And we do always try to make sure we connect you with the experts on these issues. And Greg Jarrett joins us now, Fox News legal analyst, former defense attorney and law professor, author of The Constitution and Other Patriotic Documents. Greg Jarrett, welcome back to the show.
Oh, good to be with you, Annie. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. It looks like, if people are watching this like it's a sporting event, that Donald Trump had a big win today through the Supreme Court. What was your assessment of how the Supreme Court chose to rule on the specific issue he was talking about there with the power of district judges? But you can add in some of the other rulings if you so choose.
Well, I always thought this would be an easy decision for the Supreme Court because for decades, both liberal and conservative justices have criticized these lower court district judges for abusing their authority and issuing nationwide injunctions. But the high court never did anything about it. They just complained about it. But because in the last 5 months, the Supreme Court itself has become overwhelmed by these injunction appeals, they were finally forced to reckon with a broken system that they had allowed to go on for too long, for the better part of six decades. And the only solution was to rein in the abuse and set limits on these district judges, which is what they did. And, you know, I thought it was a very good opinion written by Amy Coney Barrett. She pointed out that there is absolutely nothing in the law that allows district judges to order anything beyond their own physical district. I mean, their jurisdiction is narrowly defined under the Constitution. They may decide cases and controversies before them, which means they may not issue orders nationwide that impact millions of people who never set foot inside that judge's courtroom.
Great.
Just
to follow up on what you're explaining here, we're speaking with Greg Jarrett. Does that mean that does President Trump get to put the pedal to the metal on the procedures he was going through to try to remove illegal immigrants from our country right now? Does he get to accelerate what he was doing because of this ruling?
Yes, I think he does. But equally important is the Supreme Court ruling on Monday of this week, in which they opened the door and said, go right ahead to deport people, immigrants, back to a country that's not their own, a third-party country. And you can do it with almost no notice, limited notice, which is not a full due process procedure in the conventional sense. So that means expedited removal. You can send them anywhere you want, other than their home country. if there's a problem there. And, you know, so I think this will accelerate the deportations.
Interesting. So another element of today and what people have been watching with the Supreme Court, the term birthright citizenship has been attached to these rulings, but the rulings weren't on birthright citizenship and the absolute definition of that as it is. It seems as though the president is still going to pursue that and wants a more clear understanding of how the Supreme Court feels about it. Can you talk to us a little bit about whether birthright citizenship looks like it will immediately find its way to the Supreme Court, or what would need to happen in order for that to take place?
Well, I think sooner rather than later, because the case is already before the Supreme Court. But instead of ruling on the merits, what Barrett said is we're just ruling on the remedy, the procedure. You know, it's basic civil procedure 101 in law school your first year. And they'll get to the merits of birthright citizenship, you know, probably in the next term. Yeah, I wrote, I guess it was in January, maybe it was February, a column that said, you know, there's actually a legitimate basis for denying birthright citizenship to people here illegally and their children. And I would invite people to read that, because I went through the legislative history of the 14th Amendment and identified its original purpose, and it does not include people here illegally. So it'll be an interesting debate. I don't know how the Supreme Court will rule. That's a closer case. Today's ruling was not a close case at all. It was rather obvious.
Yeah. Greg Jarrett speaking with us right now. The president at the podium in the press briefing room today repeated that the birthright citizenship element had to do with the babies of slaves, which I assume has a bit to do with your writings. And we will make sure that we retweet that to our audience. But he repeated that several times. So it does seem as though he's looking to pursue a clear definition on the issue.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, whenever you're trying to interpret the law, you look at the original, you know, legislative purpose in this particular case, an amendment to the Constitution, and what the people who framed that amendment meant. And there's a considerable amount of evidence that they meant it in a very narrow way and not this unlimited entry to citizenship by anybody who breaks our laws and comes here illegally.
Another ruling today, we're speaking with Greg Jarrett, Fox News legal analyst, about education. This is important to me because with four kids, you're constantly always trying to police what is going in the minds of your children. You'd think you can turn them over to your school, your public school system, and trust that what is being educated there is something that fits your values at home. That wasn't the case for some Maryland families. And the interesting element to this, in my opinion, is this was a Muslim and Christian joint effort to push back against what the public school system was trying to put into the classrooms of these elementary kids. Can you explain what the Supreme Court ruled today on this issue?
Well, the Supreme Court said that parents have the right to exclude their children from a public school system's lessons that contain themes that they disapprove of on religious grounds, homosexuality, transgenderism. If they feel that material conflicts with their religious faith, they have the right to pull their kids out. And, you know, Alito wrote for the majority, and he said the government burdens the religious exercise of parents when it makes them submit their children to instruction that poses a threat of undermining their religious beliefs. And he's right about that. And, you know, all you have to do is read the First Amendment to understand that.
Yeah, certainly. Were there any of the rulings that came out of the Supreme Court this week that you thought, okay, now we've had some big victories here for the Trump administration. They haven't been afraid in these first months of the administration to make an effort to accomplish, you know, whatever it is the issue is they're trying to accomplish, knowing that it might go to the courts. Is there anything that happened this week that you feel like that might have been a setback for the Trump administration?
No, not really. Nothing stands out, jumps out at me. I think this was a week of wins for the Trump administration on the two cases that you and I've talked about today, as well as the Monday case, which was highly important for deportation. You know, the federal government is in control of both immigration and deportation. And you know, the Supreme Court reminded the litigants of that fundamental fact. And, you know, once again, they sort of fired a shot of the bow of district court judges who think they're, you know, super presidents who can veto and countermand the elected president, when in fact they're unelected judges. They're not imperial judges, as Barrett wrote in her decision today. So, you know, I think this is an important method of reining in out of control lower court judges who, you know, in my opinion, get it wrong too often. And it's often the Supreme Court that has to fix what they get wrong.
Yeah, certainly. Greg Jarrett speaking with us right now. Last question, not particularly really about the Supreme Court, but I just thought, since we have you here, I'd like to know your thoughts on what the House Oversight Committee is doing while we're talking about the presidency, looking into Joe Biden's presidency, asking the questions about the auto pen. In your mind, just on a high level view, do you feel like this is just a political investigation, or do you see avenues where this might lead to some crime?
No, I think it's incredibly important. Look, auto pens are legal as long as the president grants his direct consent. He may not delegate authorization to somebody else. And that appears to be what has happened. Neera Tanden was the first witness who testified, and she was the one who was principally operating the auto pen, and yet she said, "I don't know who authorized it above me." Now, yeah, that's insane. And it completely proves the case that some of these executive orders, some of the pardons and commutations and memos and so forth, may be null and void. They may be invalid unless it can be demonstrated that Biden directly approved and consented. But what if the president is so mentally diminished that he's not even capable of consent? Then what do you have? Well, you have forgery, which is a crime. People operating an auto pen when either you don't have consent or a guy not capable of consent. So I think it's a very serious investigation. It's historic because, this is the first time since Woodrow Wilson in which we had a president who appears to have been not in mentally competent to make decisions. Now, you know, maybe Democrats can disprove that. Maybe Joe Biden can disprove it. Mm. Although, you know, I tend to think he doesn't know what he had for breakfast, much less what he was doing during the last 4 years of his presidency.
I love to hear you say that because it's easy if you're just consuming the political side of this situation for people to just be like, oh, that's just politics. He's not the president. Leave him alone. I do not want to see what happened to our country in the last 4 years happen again. And I would assume that there are people still in the bureaucracy of our government potentially who could have known what was going on. And if that's the case, it seems as though the American people have a right to understand what happened.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. I think it's highly important. And, you know, the fact that Democrats largely boycotted the first hearing suggests to me that they're, they're either embarrassed by what went on for 4 years, or they, you know, were part of the participation cover up of it.
Yes,
they knew, but they wouldn't speak up about it, as so many journalists did. And that's now coming out. So, you know, there's a lot of blame to go around, but most of it falls in Trump's inner circle, Biden's inner circle, including his wife, Jill Biden.
Yeah, man, I've had words about her. As a wife, I don't know how you could watch your husband experience what he did.
Great. Well, elder abuse comes to mind,
yes,
doesn't it?
Yes, yes. In front of the entire world. It's unreal. Greg Jarrett, you are a treasure to have on the show. Thank you for your time today. We appreciate you.
My pleasure, Annie. Thanks.
Take care. Bye-bye. He is a Fox News legal analyst, a wonderful voice to have on the Annie Fry Show today on a big day of Supreme Court rulings and wins that just keep stacking up for Trump. Bad day for the TDSers. Eric Schmidt's going to be on the show with us probably. He was supposed to be on at 1:30. They asked if we could postpone to 1:40. Is that still the case? We're postponing to 1:45 because he's sitting down and talking to Scott Bessent. And I told Brad to tell Bessent to wait, but I don't think Brad did that. So we're going to talk with Eric Schmidt a little bit later than first planned. Understood immediately when Senator Schmidt said that he could come on the show today that a lot of what you're hearing in the news is the big, beautiful bill getting smacked around in the Senate. If we lose him, we lose him. But we have him for right now at 1:45. And I think he's joining us on Zoom. Is that right? So he'll be on the live stream with us. Last time I saw him on a Zoom, he had a bunch of Cardinal stuff in the background. That was cool. Eric Schmidt at 1:45-ish. Let's get Ryan Wiggins back in the studio next. Don't go away.
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's 100% natural, hormone-free, and side-effect-free. Here's how it works. The app analyzes daily changes in your body temperature to find your fertile window so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. Natural Cycles is a clinically proven non-hormonal birth control option that's 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. No synthetic hormones, just science. And if you're ready to start family planning, switching from preventing to planning a pregnancy is as easy as tapping a button. Plus, the Natural Cycles app makes tracking fertility easy. You can measure your temperature trends using an Oura Ring, Apple Watch, or our Bluetooth thermometer, which is free when you sign up for an annual subscription. Join over 4 million registered users who are taking control of their fertility naturally. Save 15% when you sign up with code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com. That's RADIO15 for 15% off today. Inside your house might
have a little dirt on my boots. Just as earlier, two days ago, I was driving home and somebody was talking about Marco. Oh, we talked about Marco Rubio on the show. And people are like, wow, Marco Rubio is really good at this stuff. And I was a Marco Rubio person in 2016, the primary, proud to do it. In the 2016 primary, I voted for Marco Rubio in Illinois, and he conceded his race like a couple of days before Illinois. It was over. It was obviously over. Like, I knew going into it in Illinois that I was not going to help elect Marco Rubio to the presidency, but I loved what he was saying so much. And I wasn't even 100% sold in the 2016 primary on Donald Trump. I liked Donald Trump more than I liked Ted Cruz. I just believed Donald Trump more than I believed Ted Cruz. You ever around people who you know they're selling you something?
Oh yeah.
I am allergic to that.
I mean, that's a lot of politicians, but also the good ones then really shine through. You know, in 2016, I was in the same boat where I really kind of liked Rubio. I didn't dislike Trump. I just didn't know what to make of him at the time. He was so different, and I thought he really didn't have a chance to win. Therefore, I thought he was not a good candidate because I didn't think he could win.
So, I mean, there are a ton of people who are like me, maybe you, that were like, fine, I'll vote for Donald Trump in the election because Hillary Clinton having a Supreme Court justice nomination is a disaster. I know that.
Uh-huh.
And how bad could Donald Trump be? Not as bad as she will. Done. And you could go back because June of 2016 was my first time on the air on the weekends and Saturdays. 5 to 7 p.m. is where we started. And so every week I'd get my little 2 hours to play, cover the primary, cover the election. It was really cool to be able to, like, I snuck in there just in time to actually be able to cover that and be a part of that on air in some teeny tiny small capacity. If you were ever stranded on a desert island and had that much amount of time, you'd be able to listen to the arc of me coming into Donald Trump is the most conservative politician I've ever met. Like, in action, in purpose, because what he does, he just does because it's the right thing to do. He's I mean, they're probably surrounding him with poll tested words and, you know, we need to frame it this way. And oh, we can't do that quite yet. He's been influenced by that early on in his presidency because it's such a big job that you wouldn't know what you don't know until you know it. And it is so clear. Look at how it is mind blowing how successful Donald Trump has been in these first 5 months as president. The media is not even hitting him. The things that the left is throwing at Donald Trump as some sort of negative that in 2016, you just have to whisper it. And it was like wildfire. It would go everywhere and everybody would collectively high five together on what we hate Donald Trump for today. And everybody just gave into it. You didn't have to do any research. You didn't have to have anything but faith in the aggressive progressive left that what they were saying was right. Because even if it wasn't factually right, it was for the good outcome of the country. Because people, and honestly good people, were made to be so afraid and so scared of this man that they have never been able to think straight about him. And it took from the beginning of the primary where Trump got involved, I guess, in 2015, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All the way to 2023 or something when he announces he's running for president again, for people to stop listening to what the left is begging you to think about this man without actual evidence, just begging you to feel about Donald Trump. And in order to do that, they had to make it so that you wouldn't pay attention to your gut or to your brain. Just feel. And America had to suffer through 4 years of Joe Biden. And now these same people are like, I don't know if Joe Biden was really with it the whole time. It makes you want to bang your head into the wall, but you have to remember that we're winning in a really, really big, repetitive way right now. This far into Donald Trump's presidency, the wins, we got to get a new storage closet to put all of the wins that we need to, that we continue to stack up in this administration. And he's just getting started. It's just beginning. There are a lot more to come. And the main effort against Donald Trump has been a legal one in these district courts. It's the same kind of bologna sausage that they threw at Donald Trump when he was running for president. Get activist judges to lob charges against him in districts where they could do that and get away with it. You know, a district where you could throw whatever charge you wanted at Donald Trump because you'd get a conviction. And it's like the same district where you're like, we can't put Joe Biden on trial. They'll never convict him. They won't even listen to him. He's just an old man who doesn't know what he's doing. Oh, he's the president. We've lived through some really, really crazy times. And I don't know if we've ever seen a better version of Donald Trump than we have right now. I'm really... I think these Supreme Court cases coming down the way they did is going to be like, it's going to be like steroids for him going forward.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you think about the stuff like, oh, you can't take away the funding from 15 people who've been sitting in an office doing nothing for the last 12 years. How could a court say these things? That stuff's gone. That stuff's gone now. It's very exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Let's take a quick break. We've pushed Eric Schmidt back a segment. Scott Bessent wanted to talk to Eric Schmidt, and they asked if it was okay, and I allowed it. I think the alternative was, we'll just not do your show. But I don't know if they said that specifically. Let me think what I want to think. YouTube live chat poll today. I don't know if you mentioned this. Did you mention this?
I didn't know.
All right. Which do you prefer? 105 degree heat index or a -5 degree wind chill? Annie Fry YouTube channel. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles? The hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Brew biker trash. Is that a generated YouTube
band?
Name? Could be.
Guru Biker Trap? Oh, that's, okay, let me see here. Got it. Got it. That's somebody commented.
Commented on the YouTube poll. It says, love your guys' show. No offense to anyone. I'd rather sweat than freeze.
Yeah.
What are you? 105 heat index, which is literally what we've had this week, and then some. Or -5 wind chill.
Between these two choices, I am 105 degree heat index. But it's only because you put -5 degree wind chill. I lean cold in almost all of these
polls. What do you
mean? But that one is extreme. I would rather, -5 degree is miserable.
Yeah.
I don't like 105 degree heat index either. But between those two, I'll go with the heat.
I was literally sitting in Arnold earlier this week and it said 106 on my AccuWeather app. Real feel, 106 degrees. And I'm like, this is terrible.
Yeah, it's terrible.
There was no breeze. There was no wind. It was a turf field, which just adds to the baking of the whole situation. But I sat there. I existed in it. I was happy to watch my son play some baseball. But -5 wind chill, you will not find me outside in that.
No. And your car sometimes won't start. I mean, it affects your life in ways that he can do stuff too.
Yeah.
But those two extremes, I'm going to take the heat.
A lot of people are making this comment as well, but when you are, here's Lycona. I hope I don't say anything that I shouldn't say because you guys snuck it past me on one of these names. The older I get, the more I despise the cold. Plus, I don't have to shovel 100 degree heat or scrape it off my car. But if you are in -5 degree wind chill weather, you have icy roads and all of that stuff. It's obviously very dangerous to be out in crazy heat, but it's very dangerous to be driving and everything in the wind chill when it's that cold. What do you think, Brad?
This has changed for me over the years as I've lost weight. I am now a heat person and I would much rather be in 105 than -5. I've lost over 100 pounds and losing that much weight, now I get cold a lot easier than I used to. So, yeah, give me the 105. I'd rather sweat than freeze. My fingertips get numb, and that's not pleasant.
What's the hottest you've ever experienced weather? Do you know off the top of your head, Ryan?
Heat index or
just
temperature?
Just like where were you? What were you doing?
Probably Florida in the middle of summer at some point. Although there are times that St. Louis will rival that.
Yeah.
So
they're both miserably hot.
They're both very humid, too.
But this can be hotter than Florida. The coldest I think I've ever been in my life was my brother played football at Edwardsville High School, and they made it to the state championship game back-to-back years. I can't remember what year it was. I think it would have been the fall of 2002. Tigers out there, do you know? I don't know. But they played at U of I in the state championship game. Maybe against Mount Prospect? I don't know. And it was so cold. There were people digging cardboard boxes out of dumpsters from like the concession stand to unfold them and create wind blocks.
Oh my gosh.
And I remember coming home from that football game from Champaign, and it took me the whole ride home to like make my bones not be chattering. It was so miserable. That's just, you know, we had hot hands in our hands and in our shoes and our pants and everything. We were all snuggled up together. It was so miserable. What's the coldest you've ever been, Brad?
Oh, man. I don't remember the year, but I remember we were outside because my friend is in from California. He's like, no, I got to get used to this cold. I live here now, blah, blah, blah. And I think it was -20 wind chill and like negative temperatures. And he wanted to throw the football. And I think
we throw to yourself.
Yeah. I think,
let's go throw a football, friend.
Yeah, and I just remember it was outside, it was at night, and whenever it's cold at night and the wind isn't blowing and, you know, that cold stillness, it was that, and I felt like my breath was freezing and hitting the ground.
Do you remember being miserably cold?
I do. It's funny because all of these memories of weather, they start at 18 years old, because before 18, parents are like, you're not going out in this. You're not even taking the car.
Yeah.
But after that, then, you know, you can do whatever you want. But I went into Minnesota to see a Wild versus Blues game with a couple friends of mine. And I remember being outside that game. We had to park on a rooftop somewhere. And man, I had never experienced Minnesota cold in winter like that. And thought this actually, the thermometer probably says the same thing. I'm sure I've experienced that temperature before, but there was something about Minnesota cold that was breathtaking.
Wait, Ruth, somebody who a friend of mine texted me, and she knows a little bit about the north, said you wouldn't have icy roads with -5 degree wind chill. It's too cold for snow to melt and turn to ice. All right, well, I would be frozen on the roads, and I'd be a speed bump, therefore dangerous to traffic.
You'd be like the end of the Jack Nicholson movie.
Good story. Why don't you finish
halfway
up that?
Through that, I was next, like, oh, no, I can't find the name of the movie.
Next time, you go through the whole thought in your head, and you jump right in there when you're ready. Ethan?
Did you say that your coldest experience was at the Winter Classic, the Blues Wild game?
No, not the Winter Classic. It was just some random just Wild versus Blues game.
Because mine was Wild versus Blues, too.
Wow.
But I was outside for the whole thing. It was the Winter Classic in 2022, and with the wind chill, it got down to like negative 30 degrees, negative 32 or something like that.
In Minnesota?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was terrible. That's so cold that it sounds like the end of The Shining. I found it.
Never seen it.
It's a scary movie.
I've heard.
Spooky.
Here's Johnny, which is what Jesse Waters' producer says every day when he does those Man on the Street interviews. Have you seen those?
Yeah, I don't see them that often. But
I love them. We've tried to get producer Johnny on the Annie Fry Show, and they're like, you can't do that. We're like, come on, why? We want to make him a big deal in our little corner of the country. When I watch Johnny do those Man on the Street interviews, this is weird, but once you see it, I want to know if you guys experience the same thing. I imagine that how old do you think Johnny is?
Johnny Belisario, 27.
28.
20s, right?
Yeah.
$1.
Putting a lot of dollars out today.
I'm up to three. I feel like that is 100% what Fred Bottomer would have been like at 28 years old.
Oh, yeah?
I don't know why. They don't look alike or anything like that, but just the way, like, Fred is funny and very, very smart, and Johnny Belisario is really smart because the way he walks through these conversations and gets great content out of people, but he still has to know his stuff in order to actually argue with these people who sometimes they know a lot, sometimes they don't know anything. Not argue, but just further the conversation. I just always imagine that's what 20-whatever-year-old Fred Bottomer would be like.
That story reminded me of the end of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Because of the Fred Bottomer part?
No, because of the Jack Nicholson tie.
Are you just naming Jack Nicholson movies?
Batman?
Do you have a list pulled up?
No.
He does! He has a list of Jack Nicholson movies.
This list is as good as it gets.
Do you want to get them all out now? I don't want to do this the whole show.
We have
Schmidt on pretty soon.
I'm in the studio with a few good men.
Yeah.
The Departed.
You are just listening. We're going to take a quick break, connect with Senator Eric Schmidt, who is going to pop up on a phone call with us to discuss a whole bunch of things, among them the big, beautiful bill that the Senate is discussing right now, trying to get to come to a vote. I heard Senator Kennedy saying today, get the vote started so that we can offer amendments if necessary. We need to get this process moving. We'll get an update from your senator, Missouri, the great Senator Eric Schmidt, next on the Annie Fry Show.
Well, we're going to get this done, and I think every Republican understands what's at stake here, the entire America First agenda. The president needs these tools and resources to grow the economy, to rein spending in and bring the prices down that people have suffered with, and to secure the border and strengthen our defense. So failure is not an option.
Failure is not an option. The entire America First agenda is at stake. This, according to House Budget Chairman Arnington from Texas. Let's get to our guest. You know what that sound means. Senator Eric Schmidt back on the Annie Fry Show. Senator, we're very grateful. We know your time is precious right now. Thanks for being with us.
Sure thing. Good to be with you.
What is the progress right now on the big, beautiful bill and that July 4th deadline?
Well, just this shows you how important you are and your listeners are. I literally just stepped out of our Republican Senate conference lunch where we're discussing the big, beautiful bill to call in here. So that's how much I love you, Annie, and all the great folks in the St. Louis region listening. We're going to get there. I think we're committed to being here through the weekend. There's still some things we're trying to work out, as you would with something like this with a lot of moving parts. But I think everyone's committed, you know, delivering on the big promises. You've got the no tax on tips. You've got the no tax on overtime. You've got making sure we don't have the tax cuts from 2017 expire. They're supposed to expire at the end of this year. So we extend those. And that's, you know, that's a few $1,000s for every, you know, man, woman, and child in this country as far as what the tax increase would be. So that's a very important thing to do. It makes those tax cuts permanent, so we won't have this situation again. It also has money for border security, money for deportations, money for detention beds. It's got money for our military. So it, what's important to note there is it pulls those priorities, it funds those for a few years, so that once we're past this reconciliation process, the Democrats can't hold us hostage as we go through the normal appropriations process. So we're funding and kind of front-loading those priorities for President Trump early, because we've got the ability, because we only need 51 votes in the Senate and a simple majority in the House. And so the goal is to stay here this weekend and get this done and deliver on behalf of not only the president's agenda, but really what the American people are looking for.
You're listening to Senator Eric Schmidt right here from the state of Missouri on the Big Beautiful Bill. We heard about some moves that the parliamentarian made. That stuff gets into the weeds for average folks just trying to figure out if you guys are going to get the job done. Can you simplify for us what was done with the Medicaid situation? Medicare?
So this will be kind of like process stuff that's super boring, but I'll try to make it somewhat entertaining. People don't fall asleep. But is that basically through the reconciliation process, it was legislation that was passed in the 70s. You're only supposed to be dealing with sort of budget items and tax policy. It's not really a policy thing. Like you're not allowed to have legislation in there like men playing in women's sports. Like that doesn't fit in a reconciliation bill. So the parliamentarian sort of makes some of those calls. I will say though that usually you can work around that. And like, for example, initially not allowing SNAP benefits for illegal immigrants was bounced. It was taken out. Well, there was a tweak of the language and now it's back in. So some of the stuff that's like popping up online or whatever, we should be able to work around that, because, you know, when you're talking about Medicaid and you're talking about SNAP, the only people that are affected, and the Democrats are trying to fearmonger on this, are, you know, if you're an able-bodied adult, we want to make sure you're working. And if you're an illegal immigrant, we want to make sure you're not getting any taxpayer benefits. Yeah. That's it. And so basically that's what Democrats are trying to make that seem worse than it is. But that's kind of where the sort of like in the bowels of the Senate, where you're sort of arguing of what can stay in, what can stay out. And then we'll have it on the floor. Like that's the idea, is that over the weekend we would have it on the floor. There's something called a votorama, meaning after 20 hours of debate, it's unlimited amendments, and you just rifle through these things. And so you could have 10, you could have 20, you could have 50, you could have 100 amendments that are offered, and we'll vote through that and then ultimately get to final passage. So it'll be a long but very, very important weekend for us.
Do you still believe, Senator Schmidt, that Donald Trump's desire, he said earlier at the press conference today, if they have to go longer than July 4th, they can do that. They're not completely bound by it. But it is a hope of his that he could sign this on July 4th. Is that even possible?
It is. I think the weekend, we're still within the weekend window. And as long as we don't creep outside of the weekend window, that is still possible for this to be on the president's desk and signed, because it would then go over to the House and then they would vote on it. And they can move pretty quickly in the House. They don't have the same procedural stuff that we have in the Senate. So it's still possible. But I agree. I've always thought the 4th of July was a very important goal, a self-imposed deadline, but an important one, because typically the way these things work, like just like a lot of things in life, people kind of move on deadlines, and right, the longer things kind of stick around without an end date, they can kind of drag on. So that is our goal. But we're literally today trying to iron out any of the differences that we have, and people are trying to get things included, not included, that kind of thing, for it to go onto the floor potentially by tomorrow is probably the hope.
Well, we're watching closely and we're rooting for the America First agenda to really, this process is American and it's ugly and it's sausage making, but it's not supposed to be easy for some people in Washington, D.C. to come together and regulate the country. So this is part of the process.
That's right. We've got that. And then right after that, I'm actually handling, I'm the bill handler of the rescissions package. So,
okay.
So we'll have the reconciliation, then we have rescissions, and then we'll have appropriations, and you've got all these trade deals. And so I think, you know, really what it's all shaping up here is a big, beautiful summer, And that allows these policies, which were very effective in Trump, President Trump's first term, that may, you know, had record wage growth across the board, to come in and, you know, have enough time to breathe before the midterm elections, and people could again see how successful America First agenda is. And so that's one of the reasons why we're working so hard, is we want to make sure that we've got time to see these things play out and people receive the benefits, because it's just the right thing to do.
We've got limited time left with you here, Senator Eric Schmidt, with us. I want to ask you about two things, and I'm just going to give you the floor so you can spend whichever amount of time you want on each of these issues. The first is a tweet you put out that you're taking a first of its kind act on the Biden auto pen cover up. Using your authority as chairman of the subcommittee on the Constitution, you've submitted a, quote, special access request to archivist Marco Rubio to obtain sealed documents regarding the auto pen issue. The other thing I wanted to ask you about, of course, is the Supreme Court rulings from today. But if you could talk to us about the auto pen first and follow up with the Supreme Court, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
I joked with Secretary Rubio yesterday because we were getting an all-senator briefing on the Iran issue, and I said, I sent you a letter today in your capacity as the archivist. So it's like he has many roles. But basically, we held that hearing to kind of get to the bottom of who's running the country when Joe Biden was mentally incapacitated. And one of the things we're hunting down now is when you use that auto pen, there's supposed to be a record of the authorization, and that would be held by the archivist. So we want to run that down and see, actually, was that happening, and you know, sort of who was actually in charge. That's part of that subcommittee. And as it relates to the Supreme Court today, that's a big ruling. Like, it was on birthright citizenship. It really wasn't about the merits of whether or not the president could do it or not. That'll get decided later through executive order. But what it did say is all these nationwide injunctions that we've seen have been very, very frustrating. And I predicted this and told people that as these things make their way through, these district court judges, these radicals have their 15 minutes of fame. But as they make their way through the appellate courts and the Supreme Court, President Trump, by and large, will be successful. This is a big deal. Basically, what they're saying is, the Supreme Court today was, you don't have the ability, you've never been vested with the authority to make national policy as a district court judge. Your job is to decide cases that are in front of you, the cases and controversy in front of you, among those parties. Right? You can't loop in a bunch of people or policies that aren't in front of you. So it's really severely limits the authority of the district court judges, which has been obviously very, very controversial as you've got radical after radical trying to inhibit President Trump's agenda. So it's a big, big win for President Trump and really for the separation of powers, because we talk a lot about, you know, the Article 1 branch or the Article 2 branch being restrained, but the Article 3 branch, the judiciary, also has certain restraints. They don't get you to do everything. And so the Supreme Court reined them in today, and that's a good thing.
You know, I thought that if the president were truly acting like a king, that today wouldn't, and yesterday, this week wouldn't have gone quite the way it did. Doesn't look like he's acting too much like a king. It looks like he's acting on behalf of the American people.
That's right. And he ran on very specific things, and he's doing those things. And they're authorized under law. He has the ability to enforce border laws and immigration laws. That's what he's doing. The left is losing their mind is because Joe Biden didn't do that. Right? And it had been the policy of the United States, even among Bill Clinton and Barack Obama. Between the two of them, they deported, you know, tens of millions of people. And but only when President Trump came in is that a problem. And one, it's Trump derangement syndrome. And then number two, they actually believe in open borders now. So President Trump's just executing the laws, and the Supreme Court's now saying you don't have some rogue district court judge telling him he can't do that. Just like a district court judge can't tell him, you know, he can't authorize troop movements. It'd be like a district court judge, you know, preemptively saying the president can't take the action he took this weekend. Those are core Article 2 executive branch powers, and that the President of the United States is elected by the entire country to execute. And so that's what you mean by separation of powers. When we say that, we mean it vertically and horizontally. We mean it vertically through what we're talking about here, but then also, you know, sort of horizontally and vertically, because you've got federalism. The states, you know, can push back as well. So anyway, it's a good lesson in kind of a real time on our Constitution and why it's so important to preserve it.
Senator Eric Schmidt, tell the Republicans in the Senate, get it done. We'll get it done. Happy Friday.
We'll get it done. Yeah,
go,
we'll get it done.
Go back to your lunch.
Have a great weekend.
You too.
We'll
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Senator Eric Schmidt stepping out of the Republican caucus to get the big, beautiful bill done. They're discussing it, and he wanted to prioritize you. Pretty awesome. We'll be right back.